Yeah, I'm really grateful for what you did today. Showed a lot of class.
Oh, would you expect anything else from a classy broad like me?
No, I guess not.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 22, With This Ball and Chain. Oh, tell me about it. And now here are your hosts, Sarity Bunting. Who's her?
Fuck you.
We will tell you about it at length.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Before we get into the episode, would you care to tell our listeners what is coming up on our Patreon bonus episode this week?
I would care very deeply. Coming up on Again With This, episode 17, Spread Eagle, which drops September 4th, is Jason Priestley in season 1, episode either 12 or 13, depends on where you're watching it, of 21 Jump Street. It is called Mean Streets and Pastel Houses. We have comments on that title and much more.
Oh boy.
If you would like to watch along, it is available on Peacock, Roku, Pluto TV, or you can buy it on Amazon. It is not on iTunes. And you can join us for that discussion and many others at patreon.com/againwiththis. And we hope you will, because Priestley has both his pilot mullet and a mohawk in this episode. You should check it out.
It's so Canadian, and we'll get into that too. I mean,
Oh my God, it's deeply, deeply, like even the graffiti
is
Canadian.
Thank you.
It's so good.
we'll talk about that too. Okay. Speaking of the Patreon, if you've been thinking about becoming a supporter but aren't sure what you're going to get, good news. Next Monday, September 7th, also known as Labor Day, instead of our podcast on season 2, episode 23 of Melrose Place, we're going to be releasing 2 Patreon episodes to the regular podcast feed. It's going to be our discussion of Brian Austin Green in Unwed Father and our very recent discussion of Shannon Doherty in Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Unwed Father, I think, is still on. We watch it on YouTube or Vimeo. We'll look it up. And Girls Just Want to Have Fun is on Prime or Hulu. And then after that, we will resume with Melrose Place as usual the following Monday, September 14th. But we hope that you will like what you hear and you will join us on Patreon after that. As Sarah just said, patreon.com/againwiththis. Not only for bonus content currently every other week, but for the ad-free version of the regular podcast. So check that out. And speaking of this podcast, let us begin with our C-plot. Sydney brings her schemes to the beach house. Oh, Sydney. She's bringing another milk crate of stuff out of her apartment at Melrose Place when she sees Jane picking up her mail and tries to act casual. Jane guesses that Sydney is throwing out old junk, and Sydney doesn't contradict her, so Jane has to tell her not to throw out Puddle, the stuffed dog on top, which Sydney has had forever. So Sydney just says she isn't throwing out Puddle and tries to take off, finally admitting that she's moving. Jane assumes that Amanda is kicking Sydney out and offers to talk to her, but Sydney says she doesn't need Jane to take care of her. So Jane asks where she's going. Sydney says she doesn't think Jane wants to know. And when Jane insists that she does, since they're friends again, Sydney tells her the truth. And obviously, Jane is shocked to learn that Sydney is moving in with Michael. Sydney's sorry, but it's love, she says. Jane calls this the worst thing Sydney's ever done, which maybe, I mean, given the timing, I guess, but, you know, I don't know about that. It's not great.
Well, and I don't know, like, if I'm Jane, I'm sort of done being angry at this point. It's like, you're clearly insane.
Right.
I give up.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yes. At a certain point, you have to be like, you're acting like a person in a soap opera.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Sydney tearfully shoots back that she's an adult in an adult relationship, and if Jane doesn't understand that, it's been nice knowing her. And Jane glares into the scene break. So then when we catch her again, Sydney's in a floral sundress and matching scrunchie that hilariously prefigures the kind of shit Marcia Cross will wear when she later plays a desperate housewife, by the way. In fact, that is exactly what Sydney's trying to perform as she serves Michael his microwave eggs and toaster waffles. He is not impressed by this routine, particularly after she says she told Jane about them. She goes on to lie that Jane is happy for them, which Michael obviously does not believe. And when Sydney asks what his bad mood is about, his soap operatic recap segues to her trying to be wifishly supportive in clip two.
My fiancé is dead. You're blackmailing me. And Levin still won't let me see patients. You're right. I'm a happy man.
Well, you should take the bull by the horns, sweetheart. Tell Levin you're tired of administrative duty.
Don't call me sweetheart. And what? You think I haven't already tried that? Told him I was off painkillers.
Thanks to me.
Whatever. Anyway, Levin thinks I'm a flake.
There's got to be something we can do.
There's no we. Okay? This is my life, not yours. The only reason you're here is you put a gun to my head.
That was him dumping out the coffee. Come on, guy. Don't make a mess.
Yeah. I mean, eat the breakfast first and then make the grand gesture with the coffee. Come on.
Although, do you think Sydney makes good coffee? Because I don't.
No.
Also, the sound of that stool, the like high bar chair being scraped back, like, wow, that sounded so cheap. That was a Target jobby for sure. So Michael's at work later when he can hear raucous laughter and is horrified to see that against his explicit orders, Sydney's in the hallway yucking it up with Dr. Levin, his boss. Like every other staffer at the hospital other than Michael and Matt, Levin is totally charmed by Steve, particularly a dead-on impression she apparently did of Michael before he got there. Although, sadly, when Dr. Levin asks her to do it, Sydney just puts on her gentlest tone to say they were just talking about how much Michael loves being a doctor. Rip off! The people demand to see this impression. Michael asks what Sydney is doing there in such a pissy tone that even Dr. Levin tells him to lighten up. Apparently, Sydney has successfully convinced Dr. Levin that Michael's off the pills and can be trusted with patients again. Michael reminds Levin that he said that last week, but Levin actually believes Sydney. Michael should go by Levin's office later to talk about his reinstatement, but if he screws up one more time, he's out of a job. Sydney shrugs smugly. And Michael looks like maybe he wonders if Sydney might actually be the same thing, the best thing that ever happened to him, perhaps. Might she? So Michael comes home the next day bellowing at Sydney about a truck in the driveway to find her in another Republican floral outfit, directing delivery men who are unpacking a bunch of furniture she's apparently bought without Michael's knowledge. Michael tells one of the guys to get rid of it all, but they ignore him. And when she tells one of them to go out and look for something in the truck, he calls her Mrs. Mancini. And once they're alone, Michael demands to know what she's doing, and she chirps that she's making their house a home and he should be a little more appreciative because, of course, she borrowed his credit card for the down payment and financed the rest. It's not going to happen, he says, because he hates everything she picked out and also can't afford it. But she assures him that he has great earning potential. So he changes his tone and purrs at her to send it all back and then make him dinner. She tries to get out of it by dodging that they'll discuss it later. So he adds that there's only one Mrs. Mancini, and that's his mother. And in response, she grabs him by his tie knot to warn him that he's making her mad, that when she gets mad, bad things can happen. And the scene ends with him very hilariously, like, subtly like grabbing the knot and yanking it down because she did successfully choke him because, as we've said, she's great.
She's a queen. Yep.
So Michael's on his way to perform an appendectomy when Levin waylays him to take it instead because Sydney has an emergency, so Levin sends Michael home to deal with it. Michael tries to talk Levin out of this decision, but Levin pointedly tells him they should have all learned the importance of taking care of one's home life. Sydney's really turned Michael around. She sounded upset, so Michael needs to go see her. And, of course, he comes home to find zero emergency. Sydney on the couch, reading a magazine, smirking mischievously. Michael is furious that she's messing with his career just when he got back on rotation, but she tells him their future is important too, and she thinks they should make some decisions, like clip three.
What kind of ceremony to have, who to invite, and of course, honeymoon plans.
Wait, you called me out of surgery for this, for your demented fantasies.
Michael, it's time you got your priorities straight. If you don't take care of me, you don't have a medical career, remember?
Wait a minute, wait a minute. You seriously want to get married?
I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, honey. Honey, honey.
I mean, I gotta say, like, furniture purchasing aside, she is proving that she is an asset to him as a partner. Like, her soft skills, she's proving that she's got him, like, helping him in his career.
I mean, she is, like, probably certifiably delusional, but if you can harness that, I mean, you are Michael Mancini.
Yeah.
Make it work for you.
I don't know. I think she knows what she's doing. I don't think she really thinks that he loves her. I think she's just, you know, she's using her angles.
Well, I think it's both.
Yeah.
Because the way that Laura Layton acts it, you feel like she has, like, sincere emotional skin in the game, which is really sad. But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I know where this goes, so.
Exactly.
We'll see it get there pretty soon.
Yes, we will.
But for now, we are moving on to our B plot. Amanda drops a bomb on Billy and Allison's engagement news. After impetuously quitting his job in New York, Billy has decided the play is to show up at his old job in L.A. the next day to try to grovel and get it back. I fucking hate this guy. I hate him.
God.
He asks Celia if Nancy is ready to see him yet, but Celia is in no mood to relay messages between them or help Billy in any other way after Billy got Celia's dream job over her and threw it away after what appeared to be less than a week. Billy, with all the privilege of a mediocre white man, shrugs that the job is open so Celia could go ahead and take it, as if that's how shit works. And just then,
Jesus.
Allison calls Celia's desk looking for Billy, but before Celia hands the phone over, she informs him that after Billy flaked on the opportunity, the New York office promoted someone from New York, so he basically fucked everyone from the LA office for a generation, probably. Great job, idiot. Anyway, Allison's calling. She wants to know if Billy's free for lunch because, you know, as we said in the last episode, they have not spoken a word to one another since he proposed, as far as we know.
God.
And he's fine with that. He doesn't know if he even still has a job. By the way, no, you don't. You quit. That's what happens when you quit. You don't have a job anymore. Allison now wants to discuss his proposal, but Billy idiotically suggests that she just tell him what she's thinking now on the phone. Obviously, Allison wants to see him in person, so they arrange to meet nowhere just before Billy goes in to see Nancy. Allison hangs up and discovers she had an audience. Clip 4.
Is that Billy? Yeah, how long have you been standing there?
Don't worry, I wasn't spying on you. So, the boomerang boyfriend is back from New York, huh?
Yes, he is. And I don't mean to be rude, Amanda, but I don't think it's any of your business.
Well, I was just wondering if Billy was here to stay. An unstable relationship affects one's work performance. Never knowing if he's moving to New York or Little Rock or Saskatchewan.
Staying, all right? As a matter of fact, he asked me to marry him.
I see. What a wonderful gesture. I'd give that commitment a lot of thought if I were you. I'm saying this as a friend. I know things about him that you don't even know.
Oh, Amanda. So good.
Oh.
But
I don't really think that's any of your business. Like, oh, Allison, like whenever she tries to play Amanda's game, she just gets swatted away so easily. It's so sad.
It really is. But I have to say, I'm also now just in a reverie imagining Billy living in Saskatchewan.
Well, I was glad that you clipped that because Saskatchewan. Like, oh.
Yeah. That's a toughie. America. I mean, to be fair, that was a time before you could, you know, go on Google and look up pronounce Saskatchewan because, you know, it was the past. But that is a tough one. Even some Canadians don't say it right, honestly. And it gets real cold there, so he would not like it. Anyway, apparently Billy and Allison's default lunch spot is hot dogs in the park if Allison is paying. And there's a, this is one of, so here is the moment that I was referring to where it's clear they had time for one take and they didn't get it and they had to do it anyway. So they're walking along the sidewalk. The camera operator, who is obviously, you know, several feet away from them to capture them walking, gets stuck behind a tree for several seconds. That's the shot that made it into the episode. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I made a GIF of this that you can see in the visual. It's like you can see Courtney Thorne Smith like hip check Andrew Shue back into the shot.
So good.
It's amazing. Ugh. Anyway, once you can see them both again, the tree is had its 15 minutes of fame. Allison defends her penny pinching thusly. Clip 5.
Well, if I'm going to go along with your big plans, we're going to have to start saving some money.
Is this some kind of backwards way of accepting my proposal?
Well, weddings and honeymoons aren't cheap, you know.
You've made me so happy.
Wait, Billy, one thing. I don't want to do this unless we can be totally honest with each other.
Absolutely.
Wait, listen to me for a second. Right after we got off the phone this morning, Amanda said something that really bothered me.
You know, we all have to stop listening to Amanda.
She knew some things about you that I didn't know. Do you have any idea what she's talking about?
No, I don't have the faintest idea. Allison, you know me better than anybody else. I don't know why Amanda's lashing out at everybody. And to tell you the truth, I don't really want to know. I just want to forget about all the garbage in the past and live now with you. I want to build a future together. I want to wake up every morning for the rest of my life knowing that I am with you and only you. Because in the whole world, all I really care about is you.
Well, in that case, you better marry me, Billy Campbell.
You mean it? You really mean it?
Yeah, I do. More than anything.
God. She acts like she's agreeing to buy a used car that he likes.
Yeah, Eeyore. I really do. Okay.
Forget all the garbage. Oh my God, he's so Jersey.
Buddy. Yeah. I mean, great. Anyway,
Well, our A-plot, we all know where that's going to, so whatever.
Sadly, we do. Our A-plot is Joe's legal drama, which we will get to. But so we're in the courthouse when Billy compliments Amanda on coming through for Joe, which we will also get to. So she comments that she heard about the engagement, which is just the segue that Billy was hoping for, apparently, in... thank you.
And as a matter of fact, something you should know. I'm going to tell Allison about us.
Don't even think about it. You wanted it a secret, and that's what I've been doing. If Jake finds out that we slept together again, he'd kill me.
Look, when Allison hears about this, she's going to hear about it from me.
She won't have to hear about it if you keep your mouth shut.
I would, but I don't trust you.
That was always the problem, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, no, but sure.
I mean... You know, there's an argument to be made that, like, confessing about cheating is only for the cheater's sake.
Yeah.
That's A. B, this was not really cheating because they were broken up.
Uh-huh.
But C, Billy has a point. Like, you can't trust that Amanda isn't going to just, like, come out with it to fuck Allison over or play some kind of mind game.
Yeah. So, like, the next time there's some... set to at work,
yeah,
and Amanda thinks she can fuck with Allison's head, she'll use it.
Exactly. So, you know, he's an idiot, but this is the right tactic, I think. sadly. Yeah,
no, agree. Even a broken clock, etc.
Yeah. So, knowing that Billy is about to put them on blast to Allison, Amanda decides to get in front of the story first that night with Jake, making a promise before she says anything that he won't freak out. And then pretty simply tells him how and when she did sex with another guy, though she doesn't say who. And obviously that is Jake's first question. She says it doesn't matter, but it matters to him. So after a long beat, she says it was Billy. Jake starts pacing and Amanda follows, asking him to forgive her and saying she loves him, doesn't want to lose him. It was the biggest mistake of her life. But Jake doesn't blame her and glares like a crazy person. And again, they were also broken up. So,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But oblivious to this, of course, Allison decides to interrupt Joe's fears for her life to make her jailhouse conversation about her for a hot second. Clip 7.
We'll have you home soon.
I don't know.
I know. In plenty of time to be my maid of honor.
Hear what?
Billy and I are getting married, and I want you to be there with me. Will you do it?
Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. Of course I'll... I mean, if you don't mind my shackles clanging down the aisle. Oh, my God, Allison, I'm really happy for you.
This is so gross. Allison, what is wrong with you? Like... ask her when she gets out. Is the idea like to give her something to live for? Get over yourself.
Well, really, like there's a way to, I don't know. It, like, let me take your mind off your troubles. Like, she killed a guy. This is not the angle. I don't think.
I mean, she killed a guy like the day before yesterday. You know what I mean? Like. Wow. Anyway, over to Allison and Billy's engagement party at where else? Shooters. Jake, having made his obligatory appearance under duress, is anxious to leave since obviously he is not cool with Billy at the moment. So Amanda says she just needs to say goodbye to Allison first. And of course, that is when Billy makes a beeline straight for Jake, goofily oblivious that Jake is in no mood. Clip 8.
Let me buy you a drink. I want to ask you something.
I really don't feel like it.
Okay. You gonna make me ask you this in front of God and everybody? Jake Hansen, you've been a great friend of mine last couple of years, and I want you to be my best man.
Go to hell, you son of a bitch.
Billy!
Come on, man. Hold on. Relax. Relax, man.
Right, right.
Back off.
Are you all right?
Oh, God. I think so.
I was afraid this might happen.
What do you mean?
Come on, Billy didn't tell you? The weekend you were at the ranch with Steve, that we slept together?
No.
Wait, so wait, Allison.
Locklear.
I
love that she's like, this is the only leverage I have, and even right now I will take this shred and screw Billy over by telling her first. Like, wow. Yep. You're terrible, and I love it.
It is great. The other thing is that when I was watching this, like, even though it's clearly telegraphed what's happening when Jake, you know, punches Billy and knocks him to the floor, I don't know why, it just hit me right. I, as it were, I laughed so loud. I made a gif of it. It's like, it's so, it was so funny to me at that moment. I don't know why.
Billy has been particularly gape mouthed the last couple of episodes. He's like, what's the problem? Jake's like, let me introduce you to your problem.
He just has no idea that it's coming. It's good. So the next morning, Billy very hesitantly checks on Allison in her room where she apparently slept alone. He is dressed for work with a fucking tie on. So he talked himself back into a job off screen. Ugh, the show, the shit that happens off screen is so infuriating.
Yeah. Also, he's not wearing a belt.
Like, oh, I didn't notice that.
You're probably
that.
On probation. Wear a belt.
We also don't see his shoes, but I hope he's gotten real shoes by now. Anyway.
Oh, God.
And his face is already bruised to shit. Allison's been sitting there since 5 a.m. trying to figure out what's going on. Billy does not really have much else to say except he's sorry. They talk so much about trust, and then he went and did something like this. And didn't even have the guts to tell her. He guesses the engagement's off. Instead of answering, she sort of pokes at his face and asks if it's hurt. And he ruefully says he doesn't feel too great, but he guesses he deserves it. But she doesn't think so. In fact, she thinks he deserves some understanding. Because when she went to see Steve, she did plan to sleep with him and leave Billy in the past, so she can't blame Billy for anything that he did while she was gone, which is a surprisingly mature reaction for someone to have on this show.
Yeah, I'll say.
He is dopily relieved and says he loves her. She loves him too and still wants to marry him, but if he ever lies to her again, she will make what Jake did to him look like a walk in the park. He loves it when she's tough, I just bet. Speaking of Jake... He finishes swimming laps in what appear to be swim trunks and not jorts this time when Amanda appears on her way out to work to give him a towel. She missed him last night and hopes all this hasn't come between them. He repeats that he doesn't hold the Billy fucking against her, although he should on general principles, regardless of their relationship, frankly.
But yeah, like there's a taste issue there that I'm not sure we can address.
Exactly. He just wants her to give him a couple of days, which is when Billy... apparently without peeking out the blinds to see if the coast was clear, rookie mistake, comes out on his way to the job he somehow has. But and that's when he learns things still aren't cool between our two main bros, Clip 9.
You and I need to have a little talk.
Hey, you know, you should just back off. You know what's good for you? You'll stay away from me.
Come on, man. We're friends. Let's work it out. So, is this what you wanted? Been beaten to a pulp? Our friendship with Jake's ruined? What else do you have planned?
You started it.
Okay.
Okay, second
So's your
grade.
Face. What?
That's not a great
really
line,
good
but
line
you know.
Delivery, though. Yeah. Like, she's being a total rag in this episode.
She
and
is.
Not totally in character, but... like, Locklear is loving it, and mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying it also.
Yep. Finally, our A-plot. Joe tries to stay out of prison. Orange is the new black for good old Joe, who is shivering in the corner of an overcrowded county jail cell when a guard comes to Springer, temporarily only, to bring her to meet her public defender, who is played by Stephen First, best known as Dorfman from Animal House. Here, his name is Benjamin Schuyler. He doesn't seem to have much time for her, considering it's possibly a murder case. But he quizzes her on the details of her arrest and whether she and Reed were co-conspirators, which he seems to assume they were. Because he's a public defender on TV, he has to say he's been doing this for 5 years and no one is ever innocent. So if she tells him everything, he can make a good deal with the DA, who then comes in and whose ass Ben Schuyler immediately starts kissing. This is Quentin Benson. He's the Serenity Now guy from Seinfeld, by the way. And and he's immediately warmer to Joe than her own supposed attorney, although, of course, he is also assuming that she and Reed were both involved in the drug deal, and Joe loses it. Clip 10.
You listen to me. I did not know about the drugs. He did.
Well, we can't ask him, can we? You blew a hole in his gut.
I had to kill him.
Don't say another word. You're just going to get yourself in trouble.
I didn't have a choice.
I want a phone call. Don't I get a phone call?
Yeah, you get a phone call. I came in here prepared to give you a little bit more than that. Not feeling so generous anymore.
I mean, ooh. He is acting like he's in 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
I don't know what she's doing, but like, talk about the most glaring example of, you know, we could really use another take. Like, no, No can do. Her, like, that is terrible acting.
It's very bad.
Awful.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, Jo uses her one phone call to call Jake, the brokest person she knows, and he goes straight to the courthouse to try to put up his motorcycle for her bail. Not sure this bailiff is here to barter, but he also can't take it because Joe's bail will not be set until the next day, and Jake can't see her before then either. So he goes to Amanda's office to try to get her to use her money and legal connections to help Joe. Amanda says that given the money they invested with Reed, they're already implicated in this business and it won't look good, which if that's the case, it's not going to look good regardless of what you do. But Amanda also has a rich person's confidence in the criminal justice system. Clip 11.
Joe is looking at a murder charge.
I know she's in a terrible mess, but if it really was self-defense, then they'll let her off and we won't have to get involved.
Yeah.
I know she's in a terrible mess. Golly gee, Mr. Wilson, whatever can we do?
But also, you know, if she's innocent, then she'll be fine. That's why truly innocent people shouldn't bother getting defense attorneys at all. Right, Amanda? Shut up.
Exactly.
So dumb.
What could happen? Lord.
So Jake obviously doesn't want to let Joe twist by herself and is disgusted that Amanda has no such compunction. Cut to jail, where Joe has been issued a jumpsuit and is cowering on her bunk at lights out. And the next morning, a guard brings Joe in to meet with her lawyer again. Her arraignment is coming up that day, and he's not very hopeful. If she doesn't give up everything she knows about the drug deal, including names, she will be charged with first-degree murder. And they go back and forth. She doesn't know anything. He doesn't believe her. He'll do the best he can, but he hopes she changes her mind before the arraignment. Cut to Billy and Allison's apartment, where Jake is bringing them up to speed on Joe's legal problems. They agree to help Jake with the bail by pulling the limit on their credit cards. Plural now? Okay. Not sure when that happened, but that's interesting. And Jake found a place that will hawk his motorcycles, so they all move out. Billy assumes Amanda's good for some cash, but Jake vaguely says he mentioned it and she couldn't, and Allison is not surprised because, you know. So the judge at Joe's arraignment, as Sarah noted in the last episode, is, hey, it's that lady L. Scott Caldwell from A Thousand Things, The Fugitive, for one. More recently, she's Molly's mother on Insecure. She was recurring on How to Get Away with Murder. She was on Southland. She was Rose in Lost. By the time you hear this, she will have just been on Love in the Time of Corona on Freeform.
Someone's got to do it.
I guess. Joe's lawyer is, of course, unprepared. And while he fidgets through his papers, Joe looks around and is happy to see that Jake's there to support her. Joe's lawyer pointedly asks whether she's changed her mind about how to plead. And she coldly reiterates her innocence for the 5,000th time. So he shakes his head at the DA, who requests that Joe be charged with first-degree murder and held without bail. Her lawyer requests bail of $100,000 since she isn't a flight risk, but the DA brings up the shortness of Joe's residency and her previous arrest on that gun charge, and Joe's lawyer's response to that is literally no response. Great. So, clip 12.
In that case, I have no choice but to remand the defendant.
Your Honor, may it please the court. Walter Kovacs representing the defendant.
Amanda's
Kovacs,
behind him.
This is unusual. I wouldn't think this case was nearly high profile enough for you.
I've been retained to represent Miss Reynolds by a family friend, Your Honor.
Ms. Reynolds, does that meet with your approval?
Yes.
Change of representation is noted. Ben, you're dismissed.
Aw, Amanda, coming through with the clutch move.
Yeah.
So this guy who plays Joe's new lawyer is in an episode of King of Queens that it just happened to be on TV Land last night. Where Carrie and Doug, Carrie wins Nick's season tickets, and they four season tickets, so they have to decide on which couple they're going to take with them to all their games. And this is at a period in the show where Deacon and Kelly are separated, and they don't want to bring him and whoever, so they're trying to find another couple to go with. So she, her pick is a friend of hers from spinning class, and her husband turns out to be this guy, and he has nothing in common with Doug because he's a million years old, and he's asking him like all these questions about, you know, did you ever see the St. Louis bombers, like ABA questions from before Doug was born? So they get home and Carrie's like, I didn't know. Anyway, the upshot is that they find a guy they like and a girl they like, and they end up breaking them up to make a new couple to go to basketball games with them. It's a very funny episode. It's called Connect Four, and you can now watch it on Peacock because finally King of Queens is streaming. Anyway, back to this show. Walter, the lawyer, requests that the arraignment be postponed until the next day so that he and Joe can confer, which the judge grants, and he seems very confident. Joe is extremely relieved. That night, a very pale Joe is getting that shitty visit from Allison, the terrible friend, courtesy of her amazing new lawyer. She just can't believe she's ended up like this, and thinking that she's a kid who's broke a neighbor's window, and any minute now her dad's going to show up and make everything okay. And she starts crying as she admits she doesn't know if this fancy lawyer or anyone else can help her now. Allison tells her not to worry and asks her to be her maid of honor, like a real dumb asshole. I'm still mad about it. So Jake and Amanda are going to the DA with what they know about Reed, and everything will be okay. And the next day, Jake and Amanda go to see Joe after their meeting with the DA to tell her how it went. They seem confident and add that Walter thinks the DA may be coming around. He also thinks they can get bail set, but that it might be $300,000 to $400,000. Joe's friends probably can't come up with that kind of money, but what about her father? Joe hoarsely says she couldn't tell him this, plus his business is going under. They'll have to think of something else. And Amanda mutters at Jake to tell Joe it's taken care of. Jake is shocked, so Amanda repeats that she'll take care of it. She takes the receiver to tell Joe she'll put up the complex as collateral. Joe, since, you know, she and Amanda have not always gotten along, understatement, is shocked. Amanda guesses Jake is a good influence, plus she would only lose the complex if Joe jumped bail, and she thinks Joe is a pretty good risk, and is humbled. So then the three of them are walking back into the courtyard, Joe incredulous that she's actually out. Amanda invites her to the engagement party of her shitty friends, which they decided to make a welcome home party as well. But Jake says Joe needs rest, and Joe agrees, going up to her place alone. And then it's the arraignment, take two. Based on the DA's examination of the yacht, the forensic evidence collected in the last 2 days supports Joe's claim of self-defense. Not sure how, but whatever. The charges are dismissed. Yeah, I mean, I don't want this to go on, so I'll accept it. Joe starts sobbing with relief, and the judge adds, clip 13.
Although personally, Ms. Reynolds, I'd be a little more selective in my choice of companions.
All right. I know you're a judge.
Yeah, I think she got it.
That's very judgmental.
Well, pick one that's easier to kill next time, at the very least. This was like the third attempt. Like, a harpoon didn't do it. Reed sputin' over here.
So Joe hugs Walter and asks how he made this happen. And he explains the DA was only interested in Joe if she was part of the drug buy. The murder charge was a tool to get the name of Reed's partners. Joe is aghast that the DA was just using her, I guess, because she's never watched a crime show before. But Walter says that's just how things work. They were pretty sure it was self-defense all along. And then he says, clip 14.
That boyfriend of yours was scum, Joe.
Okay, with the pylon. Yeah. She fucking knows.
She got it. They found her like in international waters with a dead body and a bunch of cash with drugs on it.
Yeah.
Come on.
She's
like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah. So she doesn't deny it, but just sadly replies that she loved him. Okay, Joe, like, just take it. Take the L, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for Reed.
Oh, God. Oh, wow.
Let us close things up by naming our episode MVP. The elderly lawyer from King of Queens.
The judge from The Fugitive.
Yeah, I like both those choices.
Yeah.
Okay, least valuable player. Oh, I'm going to say, Billy, if you announce to Amanda that you're going to be disclosing something that's going to fuck her over, you got to say it first. Don't wait several days before getting out with it, because you end up punched and your face all fucked up.
Yeah. Also, have you met Jake? Like, say it and then go to Palm Springs for 72 hours. Yeah. What are you, new?
Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, Allison considers an engagement ring upgrade. Joe considers her options, which, given that it's the 90s on Fox, are exactly 1 1/2. When she finds out she's pregnant with Reed's baby, and Michael considers how the phrase, "till death do us part," might benefit him. You might benefit from a couple of chilled cucumber slices on the old peepers after you check out our visual aids, which we do for this and every episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, or make us your choice of companion at our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm disorganized public defender Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Threat Sofa, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And that producer of ours is scum, Joe. He's David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?